This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervey. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, on this beautiful Saturday, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And of course, I can't manage your life without Carrie Kasem.
Your assistant.
You're not my assistant.
Assistant.
You run the show. I'm just here. Yeah. I'm an appendage. Just here because I have to be. But I'm leaving right after the show. I got to get to Vegas to celebrate Father's Day.
Yay!
Because Nancy's father lives in Vegas, and it's not about me. It's about him.
Well, I'm sure you will be celebrated as well.
I hope so. I know Nancy and the kids got me some gifts, which she showed me, and I already told them to give them back.
Are they twigs and coloring things?
No, they were
arts and crafts.
Pink shorts. And I was not interested.
You're lying.
So I told her to give them to her father.
Wait, really? Pink shorts?
Yeah, well, it's a bathing suit. It's pink.
Okay.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But I did get a framed picture of me coaching Hudson on his baseball.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's a good one. She showed me that. But anyway, what do you have plans? I know your father, it's very meaningful at this time of the year for your father.
It is.
I lost my father June 12th, 13 years ago. So it's around Father's Day.
That's right.
And you?
And I lost my dad on Father's Day, June 15th, 4 years ago. So it was so crazy is my dad died on World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. The UN created that, 11 years ago. And he died on World Elder Abuse Awareness Day and Father's Day. That's not a sign. I don't know what is.
It is. It's really a sign. And, you know, interestingly enough, we are going to talk today about a story which I think hits home.
Yeah.
Robin Williams. It's an incredible book. The author is David Itzkoff, and he wrote this book called Robin, which came out a couple of weeks ago. The reviews are amazing. We're going to talk to Dave. But later on the show, we have Caitlin Black on, and we do have another Father's Day theme because she is coming out with a movie on Lifetime called Killer Single Dad. Killer Single Dad.
I don't know how like dad and Father's Day friendly that is, but I guess it says dad in it.
It does say dad in it. Killer Single Dad.
Right.
And Caitlin Black is known for her acting on Heart of Dixie. She plays Annabeth Nass on Heart of Dixie, and she is coming out in the film Killer Single Dad. What an uplifting show we have today for Father's
Day. Excellent, yes.
For Mother's Day, we had, a couple years ago, we had Gloria Allred and Lisa Bloom, and then this past Mother's Day, we had Lisa Bloom and her daughter.
Which I was absent for that.
You missed it.
I didn't miss it. I left.
You walked out of the studio. You're not a fan of Lisa Bloom.
I am not.
She was in the news again. She's got some clients who, again, are the guy from Guess, Marciano or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He resigned this past week, and Lisa Bloom is representing four people who are accusing him of some bad behavior. Just another one of the
I just don't know why she's still
guys.
Doing that. Yeah, she doesn't. She's got bad behavior herself.
Well, let's talk now about a nice, it is a little bit of an uplifting theme for Father's Day because Robin Williams just represents so much that people enjoyed. He is such a treasure in this country and just such a complex, complicated man. And Dave Itzkoff, who is someone who didn't leave one stone unturned when he researched this, talked to so many people. Dave Itzkoff is a culture reporter for the New York Times, and he frequently writes about film, television, and comedy. He's the author of three books, and now he has come out with Robin. Dave Itzkoff, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Oh, thank you so much.
It is great to have you, Dave. Now, you have to be so proud of this book because the reviews have been incredible. It's not often that you just get right across the board. I'll just read a couple of them. Vogue okay. said, yeah, just you can blush. Just let your dimples show. Vogue says, a must read. Time magazine says, Dave Itzkoff allows readers a rare, intimate look at Robin Williams in this honest and emotional biography of the late entertainer. Robin is a fresh look at a man loved by many, but truly understood by few. Entertainment Weekly says, will make you weep in missing him just as much as you laugh in remembering him. That's a wonderful comment. And I found another one, which is really interesting because, this was written, by someone on the internet, and he said, this is so wonderful, so sad, and so intense. If you love Robin Williams, or even if you don't, this is a must read. The author goes into detail about everything, the joy, the hard work, the heartache, the suffering, and the illness. I will read this again and again when I recover from the heart-filling information about this fabulous, endearing man. The book is full of love, even though it has difficult parts. That is some strong praise, Dave. How does that make you feel?
Well, I guess it's appropriate for the Father's Day episode because it is like, you know, hearing a compliment from a loving parent or, you know, somebody who has to say nice things about you. I appreciate it, though. It does. I do appreciate that people recognize the effort that went into it and also that people, you know, are remembered about or, you know, reminded about what was great about Robin, what a tremendous talent he was, and what a, I think, an empathetic person he was in all the work that he did in his comedy and his films and TV shows. I know there's obviously a tragic part of his life as well, and the book deals with that, but there was a lot about him that was also wonderful, that he gave people joy and enjoyed the fact that he had the ability to do it, and I'm glad that people are reminded of that aspect of him as well.
You know, we have a lot to talk about the book and about Robin's life, but I want to start off because you did mention when you started your comments about Father's Day, and there are actually two movies, and Carrie and I were talking about this before we went on the air, that Robin Williams was in, one called World's Greatest Father, which is a really interesting, dark, dark film.
So dark.
And then there's, of course, Father's Day.
Yeah.
And in World's Greatest Father, it's interesting because one of the lines that Robin Williams says, Lance Clayton, he says, talking about his son, I didn't like him. Mm-hmm. I loved him. He was my son. And it just goes to show the complexity of being a father and how difficult it can be, mother, of course, as well.
Sure.
In the film, he says, raising a child is the toughest job you will ever love. You know, so
it's true of that film, which you're also right that it's a very dark comedy. I think some of it might resonate a little differently now, just in Robin's absence. But I think, you know, fatherhood is an important theme of his life. I think both the experience of him, being the son of a father who was often distant from him, not necessarily approving of, his choices and his interests in acting and comedy, and that who I think did finally come around and learn to support his son when he found success, and also Robin's own experience as a father. He was a father of three children, all of whom are now grown, and they were all tremendously important to him, and even became in a way a part of his act, one of his best stand-up shows, which he performed at the Metropolitan Opera. It was released as, sometimes called An Evening at the Met, but he does a fantastic set in that show when his son Zach was just about 3 years old, talking about his own experiences as a father, and it's really one of the most, memorable and I think really tender, comedy sets that he performed.
Yeah, I got to see him perform, and it was at St. Jude Children's Hospital benefit, and it's up close and intimate, and I'll never forget that. And he did so much for children and charities and philanthropy. I know we only have a few minutes before break, but I really wanted to know, how did you do your research? How did you get people to talk to you?
Well, I had written about Robin on a few different occasions for the New York Times, a number of different profiles and interviews. The longest piece that I did on him was in 2009, where he actually let me come on the road with him for a few days on what sadly ended up being his last comedy tour, which he called Weapons of Self-Destruction. And at that point,
wow.
I mean, yeah, he'd already been through, you know, he'd recently gotten out of, you know, rehab because he had relapsed into alcoholism and then gotten clean. He had had a really difficult divorce just prior, and then he'd also had open heart surgery to replace a broken valve. So a lot of really tough stuff had happened in his life, and we talked all about that in our conversations, and it was a big part of the show. He was just a very candid person, at least I found him to be in those experiences. And just through those pieces, you know, I got a little bit to know some of the people in his world. That's how I was introduced to his son, Zach, who was very instrumental both in, you know, speaking to me for the book, but also turning me on to other members of the family, to a lot of information about the Williams family that I would never have found otherwise. And from there, that was a great foundation to build on.
You know, Dave, it's ironic because you talk about Zach, and I mentioned the movie World's Greatest Dad.
Yeah.
And in that film, his son actually kills himself.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned the movie Father's Day. And in that case, his character was down and out and considering suicide. There seems to be this theme, and isn't it ironic how Robin's life ended?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the real mysteries about his life, because I think you're right. If you look at the work, there are definitely these themes about, certainly, you know, playing characters who maybe were a little bit more damaged than you first realize when you kind of look at them, that they're even the people who seem happy are, you know, hiding some pain underneath that. And you know, given the manner in which his life ended, I think people certainly came to the conclusion that it was, let's say, self-inflicted or done in a kind of conscious way. And I imagine we'll talk about this further, but the nature of you know, the disease that he was suffering from at the end of his life, it's hard to know for sure if it was something that he, you know, did you know, with in sort of with full presence of mind, and if he really knew what he was doing, or if it was just a kind of terrible fleeting impulse that he acted on.
That's a good point. Well, we want to pick up on that after break, but we do have to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Business owners, do you need cash flow? Need to hire employees, get new equipment, or buy more product? AmeriFactors knows that getting customers to pay on time can be a challenge. If you are doing business with other businesses and extending terms to them for 30, 60, or 90 days, AmeriFactors has the cash you need. We can be your accounts receivable management team. AmeriFactors can help you get paid now. Most applicants are approved, and the money can be in your account within 1 to 3 days. AmeriFactors will purchase your current receivables, and if your business customers can't or won't pay on those invoices, AmeriFactors takes the loss, not you. We are not a merchant cash advance or a collection agency. Don't wait. You can have the money you need to make payroll, take advantage of supplier discounts, or even pay yourself a bonus. At AmeriFactors, funding business is our business. Call AmeriFactors now, 800-336-5166. That's 800-336-5166. 800-336-5166. Or visit AmeriFactors.com.
Over the past year, we've been thinking a lot about how we got to where we are now. Because somewhere along the way, we lost our way. So at Wells Fargo, we're recommitting ourselves to our customers. We've eliminated product sales goals for retail bankers who serve customers in branches and call centers, so we can focus on what matters most, your satisfaction. Wells Fargo. Established 1852. Re-established 2018. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-466-9625. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-466-9625.
Need a new perspective on law and life? Call Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
You know, I can picture myself sitting on the couch as a youngster looking forward to watching Mork and Mindy.
Nanu, nanu.
Because it was just kind of like this mindless fun. And we hadn't seen a character like Robin Williams playing Mork on shows. You know, I was used to watching things like My Three Sons and Leave It to Beaver and all of those shows, Brady Bunch. And then all of a sudden, a little bit later, we get Mork and Mindy, and it's just this whack job. And it just glued you to the set.
Totally. And that music usually made me happy. Now that made me sad. And it is a happy music, but I was listening, and I got sad.
We're talking to Dave Itzkoff, and he is the author of Robin, a book that just came out in the last couple of weeks, and it's available anywhere books are sold. It's a huge seller. Amazon. Steve Martin said about this book, the definitive biography of the genius of Robin Williams. And Amy Poehler said, Dave Itzkoff straddles the man and the myth of Robin Williams, helping us to see why we fell in love with both. Isn't that true? We're talking to Dave Itzkoff. And Dave, you know, you hear that music. You did so much work on this. It must have just become a part of you. How did you immerse yourself to such a degree that everyone says that this is the definitive biography on Robin Williams?
Well, again, I appreciate that. And again, you know, you can't see me on the other end of this phone, but I am blushing. I just think you have to approach the life of somebody like Robin with the same empathy that I think he showed the rest of the world, and even for real problems that he had in his life or flaws that he certainly was very open about. He was understanding to others, and I think you have to show him the same kind of understanding in how you approach his life. And I think as you sort of go, you know, year by year and era by era through it, I think you kind of understand why he turned out, became the man that he was. I think through understanding his childhood and his upbringing, which was very privileged, but also I think often, you know, lonely for him and isolated, you can understand why he would turn to a life of performance and entertainment. And certainly, the incredible success that he had, the talent that he exhibited really right away as soon as he got into the comedy scene of San Francisco and L.A. in the 70s. And also, I think a lot of the vice that is associated with it, the bad behavior that goes along with it. It doesn't excuse him for it, but you certainly, given the environment and the astronomical fame that he achieved so rapidly, you can at least sort of understand why, you know, somebody who also, I think, needed a lot of reassurance and affirmation in his life would you know, turn to, drugs and alcohol for, you know, to fill in some of those gaps.
But that's no excuse, Carrie.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that everybody knows Robin is a comedian. And you look at some of these comedic actors, they make the best dramatic actors, the best.
Yeah.
And One Hour Photo, Good Will Hunting, What Dreams May Come, my favorite movie he ever did.
Wow.
Dead Poets Society.
He could get into these roles like no other. Did he ever talk about, what he liked to do most? Was it stand-up? Was it comedy acting? Was it dramatic acting? Did he ever talk about that?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's funny how I think the as great as he was at comedy, that was almost more the accident or the byproduct of his career, because his first love really was acting. And people may remember, I mean, he studied at Juilliard for 3 years as part of their school of drama, you know, real sort of traditional conservatory education. And prior to that, he'd been to two other colleges where he did a lot of acting training. And it was only because he, you know, dropped out of Juilliard and moved back to San Francisco and could not immediately find stage work there that he kind of tried out in the stand-up scene of that time and place, and really just clicked with it and found that he had an aptitude for it. And that was his avenue into show business and onto TV and then into movies. And so if it were not, they were, you know, he kind of had success in both arenas very fast. But I think if anything, he thought of himself as an actor first.
You know, you talk about him being an actor first, but he was also involved throughout the years that Comic Relief USA with Whoopi Goldberg and Billy Crystal. A lot of benefits, a lot of obviously stand-up. It seemed that it was almost his first love, but, you know, Carrie makes a good point that he transitioned so well. I don't know how you would define Good Morning Vietnam, but it was kind of a breakthrough movie for him, and there was some dramatic parts, but obviously also comedy. He seemed to be able to balance the two.
Good Morning Vietnam, I think that was such a success because it was really developed specifically for him and to take advantage of sort of both halves of his brain in that sense. But he did some really wonderful, I think somewhat underappreciated work even in the years before, if you think of movies like Moscow on the Hudson, which was terrific. Even Popeye, I think, is somewhat underappreciated. Everybody's favorite. But
Patch Adams.
Sure.
I like Patch Adams better than Popeye. I don't know.
Me too.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think some of the films that Carrie was pointing to from later in his career, that whole era of One Hour Photo and Insomnia, which he made with Al Pacino, an early Christopher Nolan thriller. Those are really terrific performances, and they're bittersweet because they really point to I think a different side of him that was starting to come through and really a whole other phase of his career that, you know, he could have had if not for the circumstances that ended his life. But it certainly had so much more, I think, to give and to reveal to us.
You know, I have a very similar situation with his kids and me, my brother, my sister. I know this is a hard thing too. But have you talked to the kids about this? What are they thinking at this moment? Because for me, you know, it was a little bit different. My dad didn't take his life, but his life was taken from him. And to fight with his wife of, 34 years to get justice for him has been very difficult and a very long road to travel. And it's coming. Do you see the kids getting justice for them? I mean, his, you know, what he wanted for them.
Yeah. The legal battles of his children, I think, have been largely, if not entirely, resolved. But there was, as you point, a very sad circumstance in the immediate aftermath of Robin's death that his widow, who was his third wife and not the mother of any of his three children, almost immediately initiated a very kind of ugly estate dispute with them. That even though Robin had established a trust for her that gave her the house that they lived in and a fund to maintain that house, he'd pretty clearly set aside other possessions that were intended for his children, and the children found almost immediately after his death that they couldn't even get access to that house to see what their father had left behind for them and to just, you know, to take inventory and get their hands on those things. And that precipitated a lot of legal back and forth and some really ugly exchanges that were eventually resolved without going to court, but I think really sort of exacerbated a kind of strain between the three children, who again are grown and very tightly knit among the three of them, and the widow, who I don't think they ever really felt like was totally integrated or open to the other members of the family.
Yeah, that's the same thing with us. You know, we didn't get to see what my dad left because we didn't get to see the will. We didn't get to see anything. And when we went to the house, it was completely cleaned out. Completely. Yeah. We found a couple of old things that they had not seen that were on top of different very, very high shelving.
Well, Carrie, what about like your dad's awards? Like, you know, Dave's talking about some of the collectibles, and I read somewhere about the suspenders from Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
What about Casey Kasem's?
You know, the thing that's interesting is I did become administrator of the estate. And a couple years later, after she put everything in hiding, she put everything back in the house. So I could go in with my attorneys and go in, and there were some things that, you know, we did get. I can't talk about it right now, but I did find some things that were very personal to me that don't have any worth. You couldn't sell them. I mean, maybe you could, but they were personal to me, my brother, and my sister.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
And I'm sure it was the same with Robin's kids. Now, Dave, when you talk about these kind of conflicts and everything, did that hinder you when you were doing this book? Because you spoke to a lot of people. Did you speak to all the kids, the wives, and all the friends and family?
I spoke to to a lot of them, not to all of the children, and but not having to do with the legal matters
right,
so
right.
much as, you know, Zach is older than his other two half-siblings, and I think, I think just had a different experience with his dad, that got to know him not just as a father to a son, but almost as a kind of a peer to a peer, and I think he was very comfortable, you know, talking about his own experiences, which I was certainly grateful for. I think his other brother and sister, their experiences were a little bit different, and I think it's when you're a child of somebody who's so visible, and you've spent your life, I think, having to kind of share that person with the rest of the world in a way that maybe you'd rather not. Maybe you'd just rather have that person all to yourself, and then to lose them, and then to never really, there's just some things you never got to express or experiences you never got to have with them. I think your memories of that person just become that much more valuable and personal. And I can understand why they may not necessarily want to, hurry up and share those publicly. I think that's something
I understand that.
Treasure.
You know, if Robin was reading your book, what do you think he would want us to understand? Would he appreciate it? And how would his thoughts be reviewing his own life?
Yeah, I couldn't even predict. I mean, he was very kind to me, as I know he was to other journalists and just other people who passed through his life for brief periods. I appreciated that. But I think he also had a kind of a winking understanding of journalism. I mean, going all the way back to a very early Rolling Stone profile of him from the late 1970s, where he, at the end of the piece, he kind of teasingly tells the journalist, you know, go and write your story, and thousands of years from now, the roaches will crawl all over it. And I think that's how he felt about all journalism, no matter how
I would hate for him to think that about book, Dave, that that's what he would have said about it.
I think
he probably would have appreciated the depth of it. We have to take a quick break.
You.
Can you stay with us for a couple more minutes after the break?
Oh,
great.
Course,
appreciate that.
Sure.
It's just so much. It's so deep. When you're talking about the complexities of Robin Williams, you could just talk forever.
There's so many aspects that
we do have
go
to
into.
Take a break. You're listening to Gerby's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News. I'm Joe Myers. An initiative that would allow California cities and counties to strengthen rent control options has qualified for the November ballot. The Affordable Housing Act would repeal an existing law that bans rent control on apartments, condos, and houses built after 1995. Burbank police have a suspect in custody after a nearly five-hour search this morning. Police were called to a house in the 1500 block of North Niagara Street Friday night for a reported restraining order violation. They caught the suspect in the backyard of a home in the 1400 block of Catalina Street, and he's being treated for possible injuries. 790 KABC SoCal weather. This afternoon, more clouds, high of 69. Tonight, a slight chance of showers, low around 59. It's currently cloudy and 73 in downtown L.A. More news in 30 minutes on 790 KABC, home of the 30-minute nonstop news blitz. All the best stories and smart insights. Weekdays at 8, noon, and 4. I'm Joe Myers, KABC News.
When your drains are clogged, your sink's backed up, your toilet's on the fritz. And when you need a plumber now, just simply call Ritz. We're master plumbers, we're really nice. We're big on service, not on price.
Call Ritz Plumbing at 888-757-RITZ. They're no rooter guys here, only full-service professional plumbers. You got a kitchen or bath problem? Need an earthquake valve installed? How about a tankless water heater? Well, Ritz Plumbing specializes in trenchless sewer repair, drain cleaning and maintenance, and yes, even rooter service, plus 18-month interest-free financing is possible. So call Ritz Plumbing, 888-757-RITZ. Ritz Plumbing, they're the real thing, only full-service professional plumbers, and here comes the clean pipe chorus. Hit it, guys.
So when you need some plumbing in California, yay, simply call Ritz. Don't flush your money away. Ritz
Plumbing, 888-757-RITZ.
I'm Devin. I deliver sandwiches for Jimmy John's.
Freak Town, population Devin.
We'll deliver one sandwich.
Minimum freak.
Or hundreds of sandwiches.
Infinity freak.
However many you want.
You're mayor of Freak Town, Devin. Freaky fresh, freaky fast. Jimmy John's, freak yeah.
I'm Tammy. I get to Jimmy John's early every day.
Freak-a-doodle-doo!
To bake bread fresh.
Freak-a-doodle-doe!
And we keep on baking throughout the day, so it's always fresh for our customers. That's all.
Toodaloo, freak-a-doo! Freaky fresh, freaky fast. Jimmy John's, freak yeah!
Hi, Tom Baudette taking a break from binge-watching my favorite shows. I'm currently on season 4 of that show about the zombies who live in an English manor. Or is it the one where the dragons join a biker gang? I can't really keep track anymore. Must need sleep. Luckily, Motel 6 has great rooms for great rates, so you can catch up on your sleep or use Wi-Fi to catch up on your shows. Oh, this is the one where Motel 6 leaves the light on for you. Sorry. Epic spoiler.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
I see God in my father's eyes. I see God, our father's
yeah.
life.
Carrie, this is kind of painful for some people who don't have their fathers on Father's Day.
Yeah, and I think what a beautiful song that is, something I'd want to sing.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And, of course, Robin Williams' kids, they don't have their father. The book is called Robin. Dave Itzkoff is with us. He is the culture reporter for the New York Times and wrote a magnificent book. The accolades are all over the place. They don't stop. David Thompson of the San Francisco Chronicle said something interesting. He says, it's an exhilarating book, yet disturbing too, and one of the best books ever written about anyone who sees no way out of life except by trying to make people laugh. Or is it weeping? Who can tell in a storm? Very poetic. You know, Dave, in the last few weeks, we've seen a couple of people taking respected and talented and famous people taking their lives. Started with Kate Spade and then Anthony Bourdain. When you hear a comment like that from David Thompson, no way out except trying to make people laugh, that maybe there was a way out, and you just don't know what's going on behind the eyes. They say the eyes are the windows to the soul, but there's some real pained souls in some of these very, very famous and wealthy and successful people.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some ways I want to be careful about, you know, kind of connecting all of these, you know, people and people who took their lives, because you're right. I think what does sort of unite them is certainly the fact that we don't always know what's going on, beyond what we can see of them that's visible and that's public, and that even though they may do work that delights us and in which they seem happy or pleased or satisfied, that's only a kind of a facet or a fraction of what's really going on in their world. It doesn't tell us, you know, what's happening to them day to day. And, you know, I think, I mean, sadly, there will, you know, maybe we will or won't, you know, learn more about what happened, you know, in the case of either Kate Spade or Anthony Bourdain. I do know that, you know, in the case of Robin Williams, I think a lot of conclusions were drawn, you know, very quickly about his death and why he did what he did. And you know, even if people had the best of intentions, we were all sort of operating, I think, in a kind of absence of information at the time. And so those conclusions were based on sometimes faulty premises or just, you know, people trying to make sense of, you know, what little we had in front of us. And it really was not until many months after Robin's death, when his autopsy was completed and they looked at portions of his brain tissue, and they were able to see that he had a real disease, a condition called Lewy body dementia that really, affected his brain and not only how he moved physically, but also just how he processed information and how he reacted to, you know, how he saw the world. And again, in his particular case, we don't know exactly what he might have been thinking, you know, when he did take his life, and did he even really understand who he was?
Yeah,
and what he
good
was
point.
Doing.
Good point.
Yeah, you know, my dad died of Lewy body dementia.
Yeah.
Lewy bodies or Lewy body. He died of it, and I just have to say that when he started losing his voice, because that was one of the symptoms of it, he couldn't talk and he could think of what he wanted to say, but he couldn't bring it down to his mouth. And watching him be so frustrated when his whole life was his voice, his whole life was communication, and watching that. And then to have somebody like Robin Williams, same thing. His whole life was, you know, making people laugh, making people cry. It was his voice. It was who he was. And you lose that and you start to lose yourself. It is terrifying, and it is so, so sad and heartbreaking. I can say that I understand it. I wish it wouldn't have happened, but I can understand it. And it is different than Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. What we don't know, I don't know, maybe they had terminal diseases. I don't know. I don't know anything about them. But to have depression, it is a disease, and they call it a disease, but to have something where you're literally losing your mind, where you can't think, you can't speak, you're no longer who you are, is a very terrifying thing.
It's so bittersweet because you know, in those days immediately after Robin died, and there was this whole national conversation that got opened up about mental health and depression. And while it's great that I think people felt more comfortable communicating about themselves or being aware of what, you know, people were experiencing, that's helpful, but it didn't necessarily describe exactly what was happening in certainly in Robin's life.
Right.
And for people who have Lewy body, it's not the kind of thing where just, you know, talking to them and getting them to talk about what they're experiencing is going to really help. It's not going to cure what they have.
Right.
So
exactly.
Where do we go from here? What can we learn? I know so many people are so affected by your book, Robin. And of course, you know, you can get it anywhere and order it on Amazon. But where do you go, and is there any plan to do anything with this? Are they asking you yet? I know it's early, but, you know, movie rights and all that.
Oh, I appreciate that, but, you know, it's not something that I, you know, really am pursuing. And I know you mean that in a very complimentary way. I thank you. It was satisfying to
no,
do.
No, actually, I don't. We're in L.A. here, and we're just trying to get a deal. I'm just trying to make some. I'm a lawyer, you know, so.
He's fishing. He's fishing. Does somebody have
the answer?
No, I think it was satisfying to do just in the form that it exists in, and to tell people this story. And you know, I can't even imagine somebody else trying to play Robin or to act as
right, good
Robin
point.
Because he was so unique and so one of a kind, and you know, who could do that, who could even imitate that? It's really hard to imagine, and you know, I'm not it's definitely not something that I'm trying to make occur.
Okay,
but
well,
thank you.
We'll check in with you in a little while and see.
We'll see.
Dave Itzkoff from the New York Times, we want to thank you. The book is called Robin. Thanks for being with us today on Gurvy's Law.
Thank you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. And happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you very much.
You too.
I
don't know if you have a father still living or if you have kids, but happy Father's Day to you.
Both ends. Thank you.
Both ends. Well, enjoy the day. All right. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Gurvy's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please call this toll-free number right now. 800-390-9528. That's 800-390-9528. By calling your addiction team, you're taking the first steps to recovery. The help you need could be one call away. 800-390-9528. Make the free call now. 800-390-9528. Your addiction team is a third-party advertiser for various treatment centers and placement networks. Individual results will vary. Visit youraddictionteam.com/turns for more information.
Over the past year, we've been thinking a lot about how we got to where we are now. Because somewhere along the way, we lost our way. So at Wells Fargo, we're recommitting ourselves to our customers. We've eliminated product sales goals for retail bankers who serve customers in branches and call centers. So we can focus on what matters most. Your satisfaction. Wells Fargo. Established 1852. Reestablished 2018. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
There you are. I've got great news. When you use your Capital One Venture card to book and pay for a room on hotels.com/venture, you'll earn 10 miles for every dollar you spend at thousands of hotels. Doesn't that sound amazing?
It does. Just like the smooth jazz in this hotel lounge.
Wow, Captain Obvious. I didn't realize you were such a jazz fan.
I have two loves in my life, this deal and the jazz tuba.
Clearly, it loves you right back. What's in your wallet?
Offer available through January 2020. Capital One Bank USA N.A.
Over the past year, we've been thinking a lot about how we got to where we are now. Because somewhere along the way, we lost our way. So at Wells Fargo, we're recommitting ourselves to our customers. We've eliminated product sales goals for retail bankers who serve customers in branches and call centers. So we can focus on what matters most. Your satisfaction. Wells Fargo. Established 1852. Re-established 2018. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Waiting for your luck to change? It already has, because you're listening to Gervie's Law every Saturday on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
There we go. That is nice. You like this theme song?
Heart it's a little addictive. Twangy, yeah. I like it.
Heart
I
addictive.
Like country.
Well, we're going to just really create this positive feeling for Father's Day tomorrow. Because, you know, talking about Robin Williams and talking about, you know, the difficulties in his life and also, of course, what kind of great entertainer he is with Dave Itzkoff, who
yes.
wrote the book, Robin. Now we're going to get positive. We're going to turn it into this really feel-good movie called Killer Single Dad. Killer Single Dad.
I don't know if that's so positive.
Well, we're going to find out because we have the star. We have the woman, the actress, Caitlin Black, who is known for Heart of Dixie, played Annabeth Nass. Caitlin, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, your cheery voice. You got to tell us about this film. It's a Lifetime movie coming out July 1st. It sounds intriguing. We're talking about Father's Day, and here it is, Killer Single Dad, and you play a mother, and you go to preschool, and there's this like hot-looking guy, and what happens?
Yeah, well, you would think maybe that was his Tinder profile. You know,
yeah.
Dad, I think that would be a good way to, you know, entice the ladies. But actually, the way the movie starts is Garrett, the single father, who was a sperm donor back in college, has decided he wants to kind of round up any children of his that were made through the sperm donating process. And starts to kidnap his kids. And he finds that Jennifer, my character, is actually pregnant. She's in her last trimester. And so he moves in across the way to kind of keep an eye on her, befriends her, you know, all the while planning to then take her child when it's born.
Mm.
Wow.
So it's a real feel-good beat.
Yeah, that sounds, it does sound like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those you just want to curl up with a glass of wine and just, you know, snuggle in.
I'm like getting shivers. I mean, I have two young kids, a 4 and a 5-year-old, and it really gives me shivers. I mean, these are kind of intriguing concepts when you think about it, because you don't really understand what it's like to be a father until you are a father. And to think about this and to think of how he is creepy. I mean, it sounds creepy.
Super creepy. But you know, it happens all the time with kidnapping. A mom or dad not having custody or being blocked will go in and kidnap their kid. This is a bit different, but it does happen.
Yeah. And, you know, it speaks to him being very unhinged, and you find out why. You know, throughout the story, there's something that caused his mental capacity to go a little bit off the rails there. And so it's not that you start to feel sorry for him, but you can maybe understand a little bit from where he's coming from and his mindset. But yeah, I mean, it was a creepy story to tell, and I'm, you know, I was pregnant the whole time, wearing a big baby belly for the entire shoot, which is nice because I get to wear yoga pants pretty much to work all the time.
That is a good reason.
So, you know, playing pregnant can be fun, but it definitely starts to get into your ribs. I mean, I have yet to be a mom. I hope to someday, so yeah. I haven't had the joys of pregnancy yet. But
the joy.
You have enough
trouble with a fake pregnancy. Can you imagine how fun it is with a real one?
Exactly. This is my second movie for Lifetime that I've actually played a pregnant woman. The last one I did, I was the crazy one. It was called Baby Napped. That came out last year. And it was actually based on somewhat of a true story of a woman who has a miscarriage and becomes mentally unhinged and fakes a pregnancy for 9 months and then kills her best friend and steals her baby.
Yes, I remember this story, but it wasn't a best friend. It was a woman who was kind of tracking out down this woman that was pregnant and killed her and took the baby.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she just got sentenced, correct? I think she was sentenced like this year.
I believe so. Yeah. It's So
but
luckily this time I wasn't the crazy. I didn't.
Caitlin, Killer Single Dad isn't based on a true story, is it?
As far as I know, no.
good, because it sounds off. Now, your character Jennifer welcomes this guy Garrett into the neighborhood and mm-hmm. you know, really tries to help. What do you think it is that she sees in him, other than, yeah, he's a good-looking guy, but is he charming? Like, why is she being so accommodating? Is there something with Jennifer that makes her lonely, that wants to welcome this guy into the neighborhood?
Sure. Well, in the very beginning of the movie, she has had another fight with her husband. So she's still married, but her husband has had past transgressions and has messed up again, and so she's thrown him out of the house. And the way the story evolves is that Garrett actually, she has some labor pains, but doesn't go into labor. There's a little bit of spotting that happens, and he sees it because he's stalking her, basically, and calls 911. Now, her father, Jennifer's father, is a former police officer, and so she had some people pull some favors and looked up this guy's address to thank him. And that's how their first true meeting is her, you know, coming over and to say, thank you for getting me to the hospital. You know, you're such a good Samaritan. You're my guardian angel. And that's kind of how she refers to him throughout the movie. So she sees him, and not so much as a savior complex, but, you know, someone that is looking out for her, that has her best interests and her, you know, she can't rely or depend on her husband. So she's brought in a different male figure.
It reminds me, just listening to it, it reminds me of a television series that I love that I never miss, Desperate Housewives. With all the twists and turns and, just looking and looking at you're thinking, this is intriguing because people like the intrigue of these kind of the relationships and the underlying, kind of innuendo. And there's just so much of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I adored working with Cameron Debo, who plays Garrett. He was fantastic. He plays creepy in a really great way. The nicest guy.
And you would know that because you played creepy, so you could takes one to know one.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's such a departure from Heart of Dixie, which a lot of people know you from, Rachel Bilson, mm-hmm. of course, and Jamie King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You write on your Twitter, you say you're a sarcastic, down-to-earth Midwesterner who loves playing a Southern belle. In that series, you were a Southern belle, but it kind of assumes you're just like the sweetest thing, but that wasn't always the case, was it?
Oh no, I mean, I think at the heart of it all, Annabeth's a sweetheart. She's got a good heart. There's shenanigans. There has to be shenanigans, in order to continuously move the storyline along. But yeah, I mean, she gets into a love triangle, and it's one of those places where everybody's dating everybody. You go around the merry-go-round once, I think, with everybody in a small town. And unfortunately, she stepped on some toes doing that. So, but I don't think it was ever out of malice that her character was.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, her character, I think, was definitely sweet at the core and one of the best. But.
That's the sweetness of Caitlin Black coming out.
There you go. Now, do you like playing these sweet characters with a little bit of a twist, or do you like the creepy, weird, like what you did in the first Lifetime movie you did?
I prefer to do comedy. That's where I feel the most at home.
Yeah.
I love making people laugh. I think it's one of the greatest joys that you can give to somebody. So I love comedy. I did a little recurring on Raising Hope and, you know, just I actually wrote a sketch that's getting edited right now that will hopefully be out soon. So I'd love to get back to comedy and to television, but I love working. I mean, that's
who doesn't?
Yeah, of course. Right? I've been doing theater forever, you know, on a $200 paycheck a week, you know,
right.
Learning, you know, a crazy, crazy show. So I love what I do, but yeah, I think comedy is where I like to live, but hey, anybody that wants to give me a job, I'm open.
You'll take it.
There you go. when you do a Lifetime film like Killer Single Dad, so it premieres mm-hmm. July 1st, and
yeah.
then where does it go from there?
I think now that Lifetime has Lifetime, the network, and they have Lifetime Movie Network, I think you'll see it on both channels, hopefully maybe even on demand.
Yeah.
But it definitely just, it'll circulate probably through Lifetime and then the Lifetime Movie Network. I know that Baby Napped has, you know, been on a couple of times, through the circulation desk. But you know, I'm sure my parents will tape it and,
they better.
Forever.
What about your friends from Heart of Dixie, Rachel Bilson and Jamie King? Are they supportive? Do you guys stay in touch?
We kind of do a group text around Christmas or holidays. But, you know, Rachel's on a new show right now. Jamie's got two little ones. Scott Porter has two little ones. Cress is in Atlanta doing Black Lightning. So, you know, everyone's kind of
doing their own thing.
They're on their own way.
Busy. Yeah. You know, we were definitely such a close knit family. I still see, two of the girls that played Bells, Ainsley and Brandy, and then Mallory has moved to Atlanta. So we, you know, there's people that I am able to keep in touch with. I don't have kids, so it's a little bit easier for me to make my own schedule. So,
and to go out and party, yeah.
And to go out, oh, yeah. Woohoo!
I'm such a huge partier. Me, I'm page six all the time.
You're like Carrie. Carrie has she's just...
No, I don't go anywhere.
Hang out together.
It's me. I just put this up on my Instagram. No joke. It was me and my cat. I have two, but it's me and my cat. Saturday night watching, you know, a movie or Netflix. I mean, that's my life. Like, it's so sad. People think I'm just like, you know, Hollywood. I'm like, no, no, no. Homebody.
No.
You know,
uh-huh.
Game night, maybe. And then, you know,
absolutely.
Netflix.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, same. I'm a Cavs fan, so I watched the last game on Friday. And I probably had three, maybe four drinks, and I was down for the count on Saturday. And I was like, well, this is what 34 looks like.
What fan did you say you were?
I'm a Cavs fan.
Cavs. Oh, of
Cavaliers.
Course, because you're from them, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So where's LeBron going?
I don't know, but
you don't know. I thought you did, Caitlin.
No, even though we're both from Akron, I don't have his new number. I haven't talked to him in a while.
He didn't text you where he's going next year.
He didn't.
For your sake, I hope he goes back to Cleveland, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great having him back, and he's done a lot for Cleveland for schools and for building homes. He's done a lot, so we love him there and respect him, and you know,
You'll wish him well when he leaves. Caitlin Black, the movie is called Killer Single Dad, premieres on July 1st on the Lifetime Network. Caitlin, we appreciate you being here. You have some plans for Father's Day tomorrow?
Just to call my dad.
Oh,
I'm actually going to be going home to Ohio for 2 weeks at the end of this month, so I'll be able to spend some quality time with my family.
And you'll celebrate your dad then.
Absolutely. He can grill to his heart's desire.
Sounds like fun. Well, enjoy. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
Well, Carrie.
Yes.
We have come to the end of our Father's Day spectacular. It was so uplifting with all of these positive Father's Day
I know,
stories.
You're joking.
Well, tomorrow has to be a good day. Go ahead, wish me happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.
And, you know, my heart goes out to you
as you
think of your dad. And my dad, but yours because he passed away on Father's Day.
Yes.
So I hope it's a meaningful Father's Day. I'll be leaving for Vegas right now so I can spend it with Nancy's dad and my kids, and we'll celebrate there in the heat.
Have fun.
Tomorrow. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.